Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show. With me in the studio is Claire Willis, a social worker who has worked in the fields of oncology and bereavement for more than 20 years. Claire is co-founder of the Boston nonprofit Facing Cancer Together and has led bereavement, end-of-life support, and therapeutic writing groups. Claire is also a lay Buddhist chaplain and a yoga meditation teacher specialized in oncology, therapeutic writing, and bereavement. And today, she celebrates with us the release of her new book, Opening to Grief, Finding Your Way from Loss to Peace, which she co-authored with Marnie Crawford Samuelson. Welcome, Claire, to Voice Rising.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Claire, all of us, at some point of our lives, experience loss, yet few of us are comfortable with grieving. Your new book is all about opening to grief, finding our way from loss to peace. Is it hard to navigate the waters of loss, and how does grief manifest in our lives?
Well, those are two big questions.
Yes.
First of all, actually, there's a lot of questions in there, so bear with me. I'm going to give you a big answer here. One of the things about COVID that has happened is that it's brought grief more into the culture. I think there's been a lot of shame around grief for a long time. A lot of people grieve under the covers, so to speak, and in private. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that COVID's done is brought grief into the mainstream in a way that it wasn't there before. So that we have articles in the New York Times, we have articles in the Atlantic Monthly, we have articles in our mainstream media, and there's a lot of talk about grief. And so I think that's one of the good things that's happened as a result of COVID, that people are naming something they've been feeling for a long time. COVID has brought a number of losses to us. But the other thing it's done is it's opened up in many of us any grief or loss we've had before that we hadn't grieved. So that there's kind of a double whammy. There's the grief we're feeling for the losses today in our life, and everybody's having some. And then there's the ungrieved grief from our history that never had a chance to come to light. So in a way, it's really a good opportunity for us to come to terms with it and free ourselves from some of the sorrow we've carried that we may not even have known. And one of the ways I think about grief is that grief is an expression of love that doesn't have anywhere to go. So when we suppress our grief, we are suppressing our capacity to love. Grief is an expression of our love for what's been lost. And so to dampen it down is really a disservice to our heart and mind.
Oh, that's very beautiful, Claire. When I was reading your book, exactly those images came to me, or those memories came to me. And we are in the middle of a global pandemic. And you said it so clearly that for many of us, we have the losses of today, and we also have the losses of our beloved ones to, you know, disease or through sickness or illness. But we have other losses. We had wildfires happening in California. We have floods in our nation around the world. We have, I mean, truth be, I'm sitting in another country in the moment, and I realized that I even had buried very deeply the grief that you feel losing your culture or being transplanted, even though it's a transplantation, or even though I moved to another country by choice. So it's almost because we made that conscious choice, we feel guilty of grieving. But the truth is, there is a grief to be so far away from home. And I think the list goes on for many, many people. What are other types of sorrow or burdens, maybe even from other generations that we're still carrying, that we're not even maybe aware that it's slumbering, it's burdening us, it's still holding us a bit down from our true vibrant energy that we are here to live?
Well, you know, it's. I'm glad you mentioned this concept of moving. And even though you moved, you chose to move, and you're grieving what and maybe who you left. That this is what you call a disenfranchised grief. It's a grief that isn't culturally acknowledged. It's because someone might well say to you, "But you chose it. How can you be grieving it?" Well, you can have two feelings simultaneously that are actually opposite. You can be glad to be moving, and you can be sorry to be moving. But there's a lot of disenfranchised grief in our culture. So other examples of that would be in the case of a divorce or estrangement. The loss of a pet is a very disenfranchised grief. It's not culturally acknowledged. Moving, retirement, changing jobs. There's a lot of that. And naming it is so important, because the name of it legitimizes it a little bit. It gives it a handle for people to say, "Oh, that's what I'm feeling." And I often hear that in my bereavement groups. So in the current group I'm leading, people have lost long-term partners or spouses. But there's a primary loss of the person, the person you loved. But often there are a variety of secondary losses that come along with the loss of the person that are not secondary in impact, but they're secondary to the primary. So, for instance, if you lose your husband or your wife, you may have lost the breadwinner, you may have lost economic security, you may end up losing a co-parent, you may lose a co-grandparent, you lose a future traveling companion, you may lose your home. There are all manner of losses that accompany that primary that often we don't have a name for. And to know that there are secondary losses that accompany the primary but are far from secondary in impact, and in fact, sometimes they can be even more impactful than the primary.
I love that you said that we can have more than one emotion at the same time, and I think that is something that we have to breathe into, that we can feel sad and joyful at the same time, or we can feel...
That's right.
Yeah, we can feel, or at least in my case, I can feel very happy and at home living in Europe, and at the same time, sad that my mom and brother and sister live so far away, or that the language is, you know, it's gotten easier with our virtual lives and the internet, but that it's possible to hold space. So as we deepen the practice of embracing grief and holding this uncertainty, does draw us closer to the essence of life, that pure heartbeat that we all feel. And while we're learning to dance with that uncertainty, why is that quality so important to relax into holding many emotions at once, or dancing with uncertainty, or opening ourselves up that there's no set 1, 2, 3, this is the way to go through grief?
Well, you know, actually, I meant to say this earlier, and I'll say it now, is that grief, most people think of grief as sadness and sorrow. Mm-hmm. But grief is actually anxiety, it's fear, it's depression, it's loneliness, it's regret. but it's also relief and gratitude and joy. And it's not unusual for me to hear somebody say, like there's a woman in my bereavement group who recently said, she was crying as she spoke, and she said, I am so grateful to have had the capacity to love my husband and have a good marriage for as long as I did. And she was grieving. So she was grateful and she was sad at the same time. So part of, I think, being able to hold more than one emotion is to understand that grief is an umbrella for many feelings. And one of the more common ones, and you can, without getting political, you can see this in politicians, especially in the United States, where grief actually gets expressed as anger and rage on a pretty continuous basis. And most people are more comfortable feeling anger and rage than they are feeling the vulnerability of loss and sorrow. And I've often wondered when I hear politicians who are so angry and so rageful, I think, what happened to them as children that this is the way they navigate the world? And that's what I think of when I see someone who's really angry. I think, oh, they're sitting on a pile of ungrieved grief.
Yeah, they're maybe sitting on a pile of ungrieved grief. And at the same time, I look at our media that we often do have blockbusters or films that are full of violence be the stories that we are at least told, you know, yeah, well, this is entertainment or this is fun. And I think it's this inability that we've, we haven't learned to grieve. When our pet dies, we didn't learn to properly, deeply feel again, that sorrow and maybe also that release, because maybe that pet was already very, very old and we didn't take the time to do the gratitude and, you know, the gratitude journals. I can only say it for myself. I was very touched while reading your book. My father died in a plane crash when I was 23, and I was in the middle of an album production. And my wonderful American family, and we're very close, but we were all in different parts of the world at that time. And within 2 or 3 days, we all went back to our own lives. And I went back into the studio and finished the production. And my brother and sister went back to their lives. And my mother went back to their lives. And we never properly took time to grieve. And for me, at least, it came up in very strange volcanic bubbles, or like just bubbles, you know, suddenly you're relaxed on vacation 5 years later and it comes up, and it comes up until we are able to integrate it into our lives. And that's why it's, I think the work that you're doing is so important, because if we integrate it sooner, it won't, you know, it's maybe able to be woven in a more, with more integrity, at least than but every grieving process is different. I don't want to judge my path, but
that's so true. But our capacity to grieve is also connected to our capacity for joy. So if we suppress one end of the spectrum, we're suppressing our life force and the joy as well. But, you know, one of the things that you just mentioned, which I want to, again, put a name to, is what's called the acronym is STUG, S-T-U-G. It's a sudden temporary upsurge of grief. And this often happens. So someone maybe lost their partner 2 years ago, or their parent or something, and they're walking down the supermarket aisle and they see a can of tuna fish and they remember that person loved tuna. And they just are overwhelmed with grief in that moment. And it's called a sudden temporary upsurge of grief, and it usually lasts fleetingly. But it's a very common thing, and people will often say, I thought I was doing well, and then this happened, and I feel like I've gone backwards, and I've lost it. That's what I hear. I've lost it. And I always say, you didn't lose it. You got it. You had a moment where the full Megillah, the full impact of the loss came in, because we can't live in the full impact. Stephen Levine has a beautiful thing he wrote, which he says, looking at death is like looking at the sun. We look, we turn away, we look, we turn away. If we stare at it, we'll burn our eyes. our psyche can't withstand staring at it. So we titrate it in the ways that we can. You know, my mother died a few years ago. I was asked to give a talk at this cemetery in Boston, Cambridge. And I drove in to give this talk, and I realized on that day it would have been her 100th birthday. It was 16 years after she died, and I burst out in tears. And it was the first time I had really sobbed around my mother's death. Mm-hmm. I had cried a little bit, but so everybody's journey is different, and there's so many factors that shape how we do it and whether we have permission to it and who's around us and what's the context of our life and what was the relationship like with that person. There's just no way to say how it should be.
That is so true. I'm going to pose a question for you, and then I'm going to give you time to ponder on it while we're in the break. How's that for craziness? This question is not even this question is not even on my paper actually. But what happened to me, and I know that you are a yogi and meditate and everything, is that I was also very deep into the practice of meditation. And when my father died so suddenly in this plane crash, I actually was told by all these friends, but it's only the body. It's only the body. He's still present. And although we know this, this really put a brake on my natural grieving process. So that is what we're going to explore when we get back from this break, is simply, even though, yeah, I thought so. And I thought this is not even on my paper, but it just came up very naturally. So we're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to be back with Claire B. Willis and explore more grief.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is David Strickle. I'm excited to share my brand new show, The Stream of David Live, right here on OM Times Radio. Each week, I'll have exciting guests, and I'll channel the eternal wisdom of the stream, a group of non-physical entities whose teachings have transformed lives all over the world. So join us for an uplifting hour each Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. That's The Stream of David Live right here on OM Times Radio.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
A social distancing tip.
Putting distance between yourself and others is critical to slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are ways to stay in contact without the physical contact part. Call, send a text, set up a video conference, post on social media, dedicate a song on the radio. If you have symptoms of fever, dry cough, and shortness of breath, call your healthcare provider before going to their office. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, welcome back to Voice Rising. I am your host, Kara Johnstad, and with me in the studio is Claire Willis, author of Opening to Grief, Finding Your Way from Loss to Peace. And we are exploring the many layers of grief as an expression of our love. And Claire, I left you hanging. It was a cliffhanger. With this sensation, and I have to say that it's happened to me a few times, I thought I needed to be enlightened. And many people said, you know, again, it's not death. We are deathless. The body is only the physical. The spirit is still very present. You do not need to be sad. How's that? And it really put a brake on that deep, deep sorrow that I really needed to express. And what are your thoughts on that as someone who has counseled and supported so many people with grief?
Well, how long do you have?
I have an eternity, I guess.
I guess the first thing I would say is that that's what I call a spiritual bypass, is that you mm-hmm. use spirituality to dumb down the person's emotional reaction. And those kinds of comments, it's all for the best, or you'll see them in your next life, or there's a million of them that subtly shut people down. And I've come mm-hmm. to understand that a lot of people, unless they've really done their own grief work inside out, can't really bear to be with other people who are grieving in the deepest way and allow the full expression of feelings because they're not familiar with that part of themselves. And it's too bad, but it's also why it's so important to touch into our own grief, because in doing so, we increase our own generosity and capacity to be with others as we open up to more parts of ourselves. That's sort of the first thing I would say. And the other thing is that, you know, I hear versions of this a lot, and people think that they're offering you comfort in some of these little things that they say. And often mm-hmm. what they're doing is they're trying to comfort themselves in a somewhat misguided way, meaning well, but not really hitting the point. I think the most supportive thing you could say was, I would love to hear as much as you'd like to tell me about the loss of your father. Or mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear what you loved most about him and what you're missing. Open-ended, inviting questions that let the person know that you're there for them and you're willing to listen. But to cut them off with spiritual beliefs is not really what spiritual practice is about at all. It's about being intimate with what is. It's being able to be with what is. And being with suffering is a big part of that.
Yeah. That's gorgeous. Let's repeat that. To be able to be with what is, be present with what is. You know, this show is all about voice. I'm passionate about voice. I'm passionate about all the layers of voice work. And, you know, when it happens and that grief pulls us under and it opens the underbelly of the heart, that bittersweet that we were talking about, in some cultures, for example, in Ireland, there was a practice of giving voice to grief called keening. And there were even women that were sometimes asked to come to help to open that floodgate with these high-pitched wails to help us get out of a numb state and into a fluid state to express. Do you have any experience with this practice, or
no,
is it a practice we might
incredible.
Be in? Yeah.
I have no experience with it. I mean, the way my practice and background works is just to allow, it's like, you know, the poem by Rumi, The Guest House? I'm sure you mm-hmm. do. Basically to welcome what comes, to befriend and tend and befriend whatever comes. Is basically mm-hmm. how I think about it, and to push none of it away. Because each of those feelings is asking something of us. And how do we, I mean, the first chapter of the book is, it's called Starting with Kindness, which is how can we deepen the kindness, our kindness towards ourselves, so that we can be kinder with one another. I mean, that's the heart mm-hmm. of it right there. We want our hearts to break open because it'll open us more fully to connections not only with ourselves but with others around us, and it offers us the capacity to be generous with others. If we shut down these parts of our own heart, then we'll shut them down in other people without even knowing it.
Yeah.
Just like your friend did, the people said, you know, it's just a body. They shut you down. They sort of cut you off.
Yeah, they did.
Emotionally.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That was very interesting too. Yeah, it was very interesting too, because I just released an album. I mean, we're talking, this is maybe already 40 years or 36 or so. I can't do the math, but it's many decades ago since my father died. And I also had an interesting songwriting process where I wrote a song, What He Would Say to Me. And that also opened the floodgates. And it was very interesting. It wasn't what I would say to him. It was actually what he would say to me. And that I just released that song. It's called Wings to Fly on the newest album. And it was just fascinating to see decades later how much was still there. Our voice is our guide. It is right above the heart. And I guess that's also my passion. A lot of times when we face these horrific losses, and they are in that moment not always small losses, sometimes they're big. Sometimes we lose our home, or we lose our job, or we lose a beloved person to an illness. And I mean, you know that too. We can, you know, sometimes our body is made to flee and to fight and or to freeze. And with this, with our voice being right above the heart, it's often that we go into a numbness or a shock situation. And this is why I thought keening it's just so fascinating, because often it's the voice that shuts down to protect that heart of ours. It's the throat that isn't able to even get a word out. And sometimes when we do feel people, you know, in those, we hear a sob, or we hear a long tone, or we hear the women that are keening in Ireland or in other cultures, we're able then to resonate. And through that resonance, we can come also into more flow and start to unthaw. And what is your experience with voice in the healing process? We have writing, we have speaking, we have singing. We have the inner voice work. We have so much, Claire. What is the role that the voice plays in releasing the heart, in giving expression to the heart?
It's interesting that you're asking me this. Last night I did a workshop called Write, WRITE, Write to the Heart of Grief. Although it could have been RIGHT as well.
Yeah.
And
yes.
One of the things that I was talking about is how when if you and I were talking to each other in person and I was saying certain things, I might see you nod your head in agreement, or I might see you look perplexed, or I might see you do some little nonverbal gesture that without even being conscious of it, I might alter what I'm saying. So, for instance, if I'm trying to explain something to you and you were to look confused, I might start repeating what I just said with other words. Or if you were nodding knowing, I might shorten what I was going to say, right? So these little exchanges go on all day long with people. We read their nonverbals. But the thing about writing is that we access what I call the unencumbered voice. It's you and the paper. And there's no modification of what you have to write. You know, you may decide you don't want to put it down. But there's no cueing, there's no relational cueing from the outside world that tips you one direction or the other. So I always think that the writing groups I do, where I say to people, this is a time for you to access your unencumbered voice. Let it write for your own purposes. Don't write to read. And I think that's what I know about voice in the grief process. I'm not familiar with using songs, but I know that music very much accesses grief with people. It's sort of like poetry. It goes past cognition. Poetry, a good poem, goes right past our cognitive process to the heart. And good music does the same thing. And sometimes I can listen to a piece of music and say, I'm moved to tears, but I can't tell you why. It's touching something wordless.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it goes to a wordless place for me sometimes.
Well, I think, I mean, it depends on the genre, but what poetry has and what good music for me also has is what you said in the beginning of the show is to be present with what is. And so poetry does not try to paint it in one direction or the other. And you'll often see in the good poems this bittersweet. You'll also, you'll see the you know, the healthy tree and the leaf that is, you know, falling to the ground. Or you'll see the bitter cold and the kiss at the doorway. Or, you know, you'll see this. And I think for That's me, great. What always fascinates me about music is it's similar, like, especially if we look at classical music. I mean, you have a tension and it's always resolved. So you have the bitter, or you have the you know, the heaviness maybe, but always in music, I'm always saying that's why musicians are such great peace activists. We start in a key and we are always resolving. We do not leave something unresolved. And great literature, in my opinion, used to be like
that's
that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and literature used to, when I was small, we always said once upon a time, and at the end, we always said, and they lived happily ever after. There was no unresolved. We always sought resolution. We wanted resolution.
That's right. And we found
resolution, right? And so music is that has a, it has harmony, it has different rhythms, but the essence of a great composition is always it will resolve. You will always find resolution. That's just
how
it is.
I never thought about it that way. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Mm, yeah.
Well, you know, that actually, Kara, makes me think about the last chapter in the book, which is called Welcoming the Life That's Yours. And what does it mean to welcome? And is it resolution, or is it accepting and be the willingness to be with what you've been given?
But I think resolution is, for me at least, it's, you know, I talk often to people about this. And I mean, the difference between saying letting go, often people are also told in a spiritual bypass way, you need to let go and move on. You need to let go and move on. Instead of you need to, or we are invited to, we don't need to do anything. We are invited to integrate all the different storylines and the loves and the moments that we've had in this beautiful life into our current present state and honor them. And for me, that's a very big difference when people say you need to let go of the death of your father and move on, or you need to let go of the death of your pet and move on, or, you know, then if you say you need to find a way to integrate and honor and include, it's an inclusivity, and at the same time, you're not stuck because you are moving on. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, you know, I think this phrase, move on, sounds like moving away from. And the language we use is, how do you move forward with the loss? Because you don't leave the loss behind. You never do that. You bring the loss forward in a different relationship to that person, but you find ways to bring them with you that are healthy and integrated. And, you know, it's funny, I was talking earlier with somebody about that this idea that if you've lost somebody you love, the idea is that feeling joy can feel like a betrayal of that person. You know, oh, you just lost your husband. How can you feel joyful? Or you just lost your best friend or your child. But over time, you want to figure out how to bring that person along in healthy, integrated ways and not feel that the only way to stay connected to them is through grief. Because that's a common misnomer. So how do we bring them forward with us, but not move on away from them? And I think the language there is really important.
You talk about that in the book.
Yeah,
you talk about the, you say the passage of time may be of some help while integrating grief, but time by itself is not the answer. It's how we spend the time. Can you share with us suggestions on how we heighten our awareness and dedicate time to grief? We can hold it, we can integrate it, And yet, again, we are, our lives, we do continue to move through life, whether it's forward, backwards, or in circles, I don't know sometimes, but how do we spend quality time or time with that?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think about, and I don't know whether you would agree with me having read the book, but I think of each chapter in the book as an offering or a resource as to how to hold grief. Mm-hmm. So there's mindfulness and meditation. There's a writing practice. There's using art. There's restoring ourselves in nature. There are a variety of ways that we can hold our grief and integrate it into our lives so that we're bringing what we've lost forward in a healthy way. So that's the way I think of the book, is offering resources that help us do that each chapter. I don't know whether, and that's where the first chapter starts, with just being kind to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes. I agree. There are many beautiful passages, and also at the end of every single chapter, there is an invitation to take a walk in nature, or to begin a journaling practice, or to call a dear friend or ask somebody if they would like to be a listening partner, or to reach out in many different ways and integrate what we're going through into a beautiful practice, to be on the path, so to say, right?
Yeah.
Not to be running. And I think that is the
right.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because that is, if you look at most cultures, especially the American culture, but many other cultures now in the meantime too, we are having to run and run and run and run just to survive in a way. And
well,
I think the book is an invitation.
Avoiding,
a lot of avoiding.
To be still with what is.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's, in a way, I think that's part of what COVID's done. Is it's required us to be still and to be home in a way without distraction that we have never been. You know, I don't know about you, but I used to go out to dinner, I used to go to theater, I used to go to movies. You know, there's things I did all the time, and now I'm home.
Yeah, we also are in a semi-lockdown in Berlin, so yes. We're going to take a small break, Claire.
Okay.
Yeah, hold your thought. We're going to take a very, very short break, and we're going to be back with Claire Willis and talking about grief.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Consistently attract soulmate clients, begin showing up on brand, monetizing on your calling. Welcome all spiritual coaches, leaders, healers, lightworkers, and practitioners to a show that turns you on in your business and amplifies your magnetism. I'm host, catalyst, and spiritual business coach Rosalind Fung, and I'm here to journey with you into the juicy and help you discover where the real gaps are. Ignite your mindset and soul with strategies and systems as each episode takes you to the sweet spot that activates your soulgasmic business by tuning in on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Mountain. Join me for your light language activation, and let's magnetize and monetize.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi. Hi, welcome back to Voice Rising. I am your host, Cara Johnstead, and with me in studio today is Claire Willis, author of Opening to Grief, Finding Your Way from Loss to Peace, and we are exploring grief as an expression of our love. So, Claire, death and grief do seem to make people at times very uncomfortable, the subject. And as we touch on the subject and we start to explore our own grief and how we can listen more deeply and authentically, should we prepare ourselves for awkward encounters?
That's quite a question. I think in the United States we live in a death-denying culture, and there's a lot of emphasis on looking good and being mm-hmm. in shape and all of this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so it's tough to be able to start to talk about grief and death because everything around us conspires not to, you know? Mm-hmm. What people, I think, often don't realize is that by negotiating a relationship with mortality, their life is deepened. I mean, yes. There's a deeper gratitude for what is, you know? Yes. A few years ago, I had a bout with pulmonary emboli, and I almost died. And I remember coming out of the emergency room and calling my friends. I was just crying, and I said, I just want to tell you how grateful I am for your being in my life. And it took that to get into that depth of gratitude. But we can't live in that intensity all the time. Joan Halifax once said to me, she's a Buddhist teacher in New Mexico at Upaya, and she said to us all, in the morning, think about grief, in the morning, think about death, in the noon, think about death, and in the evening, not to be morbid, but so that you make sure you're spending the morning the way you want to, you're spending the afternoon the way you want to, and you're spending the evening the way you want to. So using it as a North Star.
And I have a beautiful, my brother lives in Los Angeles, and I see him every 4 years or so. And it was really interesting. One time we had dinner and he said, so Cara, how often do we see each other? And I said, well, probably every 3-4 years. And he said, so we have another 6. Let's make this a good one. And that puts it into perspective, right?
Whoa.
Yeah, let's make this a good one. Yeah. It's for all those people out there that are going to be celebrating the holidays, and they're all getting bent out of shape with some ideology for whatever reason. Just remember, how many times do we have left? You know, even if we see each other once a year for Thanksgiving, 20, 30, 10, let's make this a good one. Yeah,
maybe
5.
One. I mean, you know,
maybe one.
One of the things that's happened, Cara, which isn't such a bad thing. I mean, it's bad and it's difficult and hard in one way, but in another way, it isn't. That COVID has put death on the horizon for people
yes.
for whom they didn't think of it before. So it's a lot closer to all of our lives than we've ever had to entertain that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's not a bad thing, because it really, when we can live with the reality of that, we really can enrich our life deeply.
I'm also not morbid, but I often say to my clients that we have a difficulty talking about death, but as musicians, we know death so well, and as listeners, because we are literally listening to, I would quote, dead people, end quote, in our cars all the time. We are in love with Ella Fitzgerald, Nina Simone, Beethoven,
right.
Chopin, Michael Jackson. All of these people are streaming. We don't think twice of any other thing when we're playing the music of Billie Holiday or Ella Fitzgerald. We're not thinking.
That's so true.
Right, and we're also not thinking
That's
when we're
right.
reading the great books of whoever, Goethe, Kafka. I mean, whoever the great books that we're not thinking.
That's right.
But it is our capacity actually to have a relationship with voices of the dead. I mean, with voices of, that have carried through time, which is good. Again, not to spiritually bypass them, to say that you know, they'll always be there. But it's a very interesting thing that we're so nervous about talking about passing and death and loss when we do have an intimate relationship with it.
Well,
in some ways,
you know, we have it. I think of it as having an intimate relationship with it cognitively, and that's mm-hmm. really different than having an intimate relationship with it experientially.
Yes.
You know, experientially, you really get it in your body. And I remember saying to Joan Halifax in a conversation, I said to her, you know, when I came out of the hospital with those pulmonary emboli, I just was crying from gratitude because I came so mm-hmm. close to dying. And I said, over time, I haven't been able to hold that level of intensity. And that's when she said, you can't live in that kind of intensity. And it goes back to this idea of looking at death as like looking at the sun. We look, turn away, we look, mm-hmm. turn away. We can't sustain the gaze because we'll burn ourselves. You know,
we can look at the moon, though, right?
We can look at the moon. And we do.
And we do.
Yeah.
Which is maybe the question to think every morning and every afternoon and every death. And I was playing, actually, when I was writing this interview, I thought, isn't it interesting that mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, and mourning, M-O-R-N-I-N-G, it's as if we do our work in the mourning, in the grieving process, in the mourning process, that we are able to, in a poetic way, arrive at a new morning, a new dawn, a new feeling of lightness coming in, which I thought was a nice little play. What would you say, Claire, if people ask, will it always be this painful?
I say no. but I also say it won't go away, because mm-hmm. if you love somebody, you don't want the love to go away. So typically, what happens is when someone first dies, the wallpaper, the floor, the rooms, the furniture, everything is searing and gray. It's just that searing pain, and our life becomes colorless. And then slowly over time, we develop resources. But always we keep in our house a gray chair for us to visit when it rains, because we'll always have days when the sorrow comes back. But what happens is over time, it diminishes in intensity, frequency, and duration. And it becomes mm-hmm. way more bearable with time, depending on how we spend that time. Time alone doesn't do it. But if we spend it wisely and allow our grief to flow, and we connect ourselves with people and the natural world and the different resources that you can have when you're grieving, it does change, but it doesn't go away. And it shouldn't, because we don't want the love to leave either.
And maybe it's also the roots, don't you think, in some way? That could be the roots. Like you said, when you left the hospital, there was so much gratitude there. And we feel so much love and gratitude when we... Yeah, when we can also feel the loss, and in that place of loss, we can also fill that up with beauty and meaning and good friendships and all those delightful things.
Being in beauty is one of the really important things for holding grief, is spending time in beautiful places.
Yeah,
letting
beauty
restore in nature. Yeah, beauty and art. In writing, there's a lot of ways we can help carry our sorrow and our anger and whatever presentation our grief has.
What is your vision for the world, and not only during these complex times, but as we move forward? Is there a thought that if each one could attend to their own, I almost want to say their own grief, we would have less grievances, right? So,
I think
we could transform it?
I mean, I would love to think something like that is possible. I think that a lot of the harshness in the world is ungrieved grief. I mean, I don't mean, when I think about it, I mean, you probably know this, when you think about clients that come to your office, they're often grieving. They may be grieving a particular loss, or they may be grieving for what they never had. But that grief is a pretty big umbrella and covers almost everything people come through, even though the details are a little bit different for each person. But, you know, I think if we could let our hearts break open, not just break, but break open, it would be a different world. If we could, because people would be connected and they would see that that we are each other and there aren't these separations that we create.
That is the
universal feeling.
Yeah. That is. I think that is the hope in action, is that we have to come to a place, or we are invited to come to a place where we can see that each of us has a heart and a heartbeat, and each of us has.
Each of us suffers.
Each of us suffers. Yeah, and each of us has grief, and each of us also has normally hope. We all love the sun. We might not be able to look at it all the time, but we love the nature. You know, we might not even be able to treat it as such, but deep down, we do know that when we don't have air anymore, when those wildfires are coming through and we can't breathe, suddenly we realize, right, that we love our forests, we love our oceans.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's so true. That loss often amplifies the love we have for something. The impending.
Yeah, there's a great line. Contrast creates preference. Right. That's always a great line.
Go.
I love
that's,
so much.
And my teacher says preference is the root of all suffering.
Yeah. Yeah. which is true too, but at the, you know, this idea that deep down we know that life is a gift. It's a gift to live, and it's a gift that we are given. I think everybody, it doesn't matter where you live on the earth, when you are faced in that moment, like you were in the hospital, or I've been also in the hospital, or you're faced with those horrific moments, you do know that you're happy to be alive. You know, you're grateful to be alive.
You don't take life for granted.
Exactly. So I'm assuming you do have a gratitude practice in many ways.
Yes, I think a gratitude practice is one of the most important things we can do. Actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the gratitude practice can often seem like, are you kidding, in the face of grief? But the practice of gratitude is probably the single most important resource we have for being able to increase our resilience and capacity to hold our suffering. So that is a reason to cultivate a gratitude practice. Our minds are instinctively hardwired to go towards the negative. We're habituated towards negative thinking. And that's just the way we were made, and that was part of, in ancient times, it's how people learned how to survive. But we don't need those habituations. We don't need that. And a gratitude practice helps to counter that and make us much stronger. You know, if I always use this example. If I'm teaching a class and there's 100 people in the class and 99 evaluations are very positive, but one is negative, where does your attention go?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes, I know that. I know that myself. I'm working on that.
We all know it. Even though we know our mind is habituated towards the negative, but I could go right to the one and say, oh, I wonder what I did wrong. How could I have gotten it so she could have maybe liked the class? Whoa, I should have done this. I mean, it's just amazing, the gyrations. So lingering with what's good, making a conscious effort to notice what is good, because there's been a lot of unexpected random acts of kindness in the midst of this COVID. People have come forward to be with each other in beautiful ways. There are things that are positive that have come out of this.
To give it voice, right? I think we can do it with acts of kindness.
Give it time. Give it
and
time.
Give it voice.
And attention.
Time.
Yes. It's so important.
Beautiful.
It might be all we can do, actually. And to extend kindness to one another. because kindness, when we can find kindness to give another, we can find the generosity in our own grief to give to another. We help our own grief and we help the grief of the other.
Yeah, and we help a grieving world, right? Even if we not be going through a personal loss in the moment, it's really powerful to start serving the world and to reach out. Claire, thank you so much for being on the show. I actually think you do not have a homepage. Is that correct? Am I wrong about this?
I have a webpage. Oh, yes, I do.
You do?
Grief.com.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, I'm sorry about that. Openingtogrief.com. Yeah.
And there's an events section on there, which has a variety of readings that I'm doing in different places over the next few weeks.
Fantastic.
So that might be useful. Yeah.
Exactly. Check out openingtogrief.com. Claire Willis, her newest book is phenomenal. Pick it up. And thank you so much for being on Voice Rising with me today, Claire. Wishing you all the best.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Kara. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.